But even if world peace, in the limited sense of the abolition of nuclear weapons, is actually achieved, and the shadow of nuclear war lifted from mankind, this will certainly not mean that we have solved all our problems. If I have so far spoken of the achievement of world peace and the abolition of nuclear weapons as though the two things were practically synonymous, this was only because the avoidance of nuclear war is our most immediate and pressing concern. Though there can be no world peace without the abolition of nuclear weapons, abolition of nuclear weapons is far from being synonymous with world peace in the full sense of the term. Nuclear weapons are not the only weapons in the arsenals of the sovereign nation states. There are many others, some of them hardly less horrible than nuclear weapons themselves. And even if nuclear war ceases to be a possibility, these could still do irreparable damage to civilization and inflict untold suffering on mankind. If peace in the full sense of the term is to be achieved, we shall therefore have to work not only for the abolition of nuclear weapons, but also for the abolition of conventional weapons too. We do not want to abolish nuclear weapons only to find ourselves in the same kind of situation that we're in today, minus nuclear weapons. Neither do we want to abolish them only to find ourselves in the same kind of situation that we were in yesterday, or even the day before yesterday. Though it will undoubtedly be an unspeakable blessing to mankind and an infinite relief, the abolition of nuclear weapons is by no means enough. Even the abolition of both nuclear and non-nuclear weapons is by no means enough. Peace, in the full sense of the term, will be achieved only when disputes between sovereign nation states, as well as between smaller groups and between individuals, are settled entirely by non-violent means. In order to achieve peace, world peace, in this fuller sense, we shall have to deepen our realization of the indivisibility of humanity and act on that realization with even greater consistency. We shall have to regard ourselves as citizens of the world in a more concrete sense than before, and rid ourselves of even the faintest vestige of nationalism. We shall have to identify ourselves more closely with all living things and love them with a more ardent and selfless love. We shall have to be a louder and clearer voice of sanity and compassion in the world. We shall also have to bring to bear on the governments and peoples of the world and on ourselves the same kind of pressure that was required for the abolition of nuclear weapons, but to an even greater extent. Above all, we shall have to intensify our commitment to the great ethical and spiritual principle of non-violence, both in respect to relations between individuals and in respect to relations between groups. Ever since the dawn of history, perhaps from the very beginning of the present cosmic cycle itself, two great principles have been at work in the world: the principle of violence and the principle of non-violence, or, as we may also call it, the principle of love, though love in the sense of agape rather than in the sense of eros. The principle of violence finds expression in force and fraud, as well as in such things as oppression, exploitation, intimidation, and blackmail. The principle of non-violence finds expression in friendliness and openness, as well as in such things as gentleness and helpfulness, and the giving of encouragement, sympathy, and appreciation. The principle of violence is reactive and ultimately destructive. The principle of non-violence is creative. The principle of violence is a principle of darkness. The principle of non-violence is a principle of light. Whereas to live in accordance with the principle of violence is to be either an animal or a devil or a combination of the two, to live in accordance with the principle of non-violence is to be a human being in the full sense of the term, or even an angel. So far, of course, men have lived in accordance with the principle of violence rather than in accordance with the principle of non-violence. They could do this because it was possible for them to live in accordance with the principle of violence without destroying themselves completely. But now, this is no longer the case. Owing to the emergence of superpowers armed with nuclear weapons, it is now virtually impossible for us to live in accordance with the principle of violence without sooner or later annihilating ourselves. We are therefore faced with the necessity of either learning to live in accordance with the principle of non-violence or not living at all. Thus, the possibility of nuclear holocaust has not only enabled us to realize the true nature of violence by showing us what the consequences of violence on the biggest conceivable scale would be, but it has also given us a much deeper appreciation of the real value of non-violence. It is because of this deeper appreciation of the real value of non-violence that we are able to realize what peace, in the full sense of the term, really means, as well as how the problem of its achievement is to be solved. Peace, world peace, is something we can hardly imagine today. We can hardly imagine a state of affairs in which disputes between groups and between individuals are settled entirely by non-violent means, because all men alike are committed to the principle of non-violence and live in accordance with its precepts. Such a world in which the principle of light had overcome the principle of darkness to so great an extent would be a world that surpassed Moore's Utopia, Bacon's New Atlantis, Campanella's City of the Sun, and Morris's Nowhere, as much as these dreams of an ideal world surpassed the real worlds of their respective days. Such a world would be a heaven on earth. It would be a world of the gods. But even the gods have their problems. Even if we had achieved world peace in the full sense of the term, we still would not have solved all our problems by any means. One problem that the gods have to face is the problem of leisure, or the problem of what to do with their time. And even though we have less leisure than the gods, this is the kind of problem that faces us too. Indeed, it faces us in the still more acute form of what are we to do with our lives? It would be a thousand pities if, having achieved world peace in the full sense of the term, we were to make no better use of our time, all of our lives, than many of us do at present. In Tennyson's The Lotus Eaters, the gods of Homeric Greece, are imagined as lying beside their nectar and looking over lands wasted by plague, famine, earthquake, and war, and on a human race subject to the painful necessity of wringing a laborious subsistence from the cultivation of the soil. it would be a thousand pities if, when we had solved the problem of world peace, the gods were to look down on a world that in many respects resembled theirs, only to see us playing bingo or watching third-rate television programs. Idealists or cynics might even be tempted to wonder whether it was really worthwhile delivering humanity from the horrors of nuclear war, only that it might fall victim to trivial interests and worthless pursuits. Thus, even if we succeed in solving the problem of peace in the full sense of the term, we shall still be faced, as we are now faced, with the even greater problem of what to do with our lives.